I'm Rena Ninen, a CBS News anchor and correspondent. Vaping and e-cigarettes have become a popular alternative to smoking for many adults, and it's also increased in popularity among teenagers. With its sleek designs and different flavors, many critics have accused vape and e-cigarette companies of marketing to teenagers. So what conversation should you have with your child about vaping and smoking e-cigarettes? Child psychologist and CBS News contributor Lisa Damore joins us from Cleveland to provide a little more advice. Lisa, welcome.
Hi, Rena. Good to be back with you.
Great to have you on. I want to ask you your sense as to how do you even begin the conversation around e-cigarettes?
Well, I think this is one of those things that really has snuck up on parents, you know, something that teenagers became very fluent in before we even knew what it was. So I think that parents are worried about it and anxious about it, and not without reason. But I think that as with any risk-based conversation with teenagers, probably the first thing that we want to accept is that they know more about it sometimes than we do, and we would probably want to start there. So I think a good thing for parents to consider doing with their teenagers is to say, what do you know about vaping? What are you hearing about vaping? What do you think about vaping? You know, get the lay of the land in terms of the teenager's orientation to the topic.
So approach them by sort of asking them what they know.
Yeah, I mean, in many ways, in any given household with a teenager, the teenager probably will know more about vaping than the grown-ups, which isn't to say that everything they know is accurate. I know that teenagers, they may be catching up to this. I think a lot of teenagers for a long time did not understand how much nicotine was involved in vaping. And that's actually the critical issue, or certainly the most critical issue. And so their information isn't always good, but they still probably do have more information than parents do. And it certainly think they have more information than parents do. And it's probably best to start a conversation recognizing that.
A lot of times when you have these conversations, if it doesn't go well, the kids might do it in secret. How do you keep the dialogue open when you know you want them to change their behavior, but they might not?
This is such a tricky one, right? Because I find myself encouraging parents to occupy two competing positions at once. And I can't seem to come up with better advice, so I've landed here for the while. So on the one hand, I think it's really important for parents to lay down clear guidelines and clear rules and give good reasons. So I think that parents should say, look, we are really concerned about vaping. We don't want you to do it. Here is why we're concerned. It does almost invariably involve nicotine. Nicotine is highly addictive, and nicotine alters the development of the adolescent brain, right? These are the reasons we don't want teenagers involved in vaping. So I think parents should say, you know, we don't want you to, and here is why. And I think then parents can make their own decisions about whether or not there will be consequences. You know, if we find you have, if we learn about it, you know, you won't do X, Y, or Z. You know, that's up to the individual parent. So I think that's one position the parent should occupy. And then, and I admit strangely in the next breath, I think parents should recognize the limits of their power and say to the teenager, we understand that we cannot control this and that this is a decision you may make. We are rooting for you to take very good care of yourself. And in our book, that involves not vaping. But we appreciate that we do not have total control here.
Wow. Now that is pretty powerful to say, we understand we don't have total control. When you say something like that, first off, it's not easy for parents to admit that and then to say it. But when you say that, what does it do to the child psychologically? You know, how does that change the conversation?
So if you don't say it, you risk setting up a cat and mouse game with a teenager. You know, if you don't say, you're basically saying, here are the rules, don't let us catch you. And even the most thoughtful, mature, earnest teenager, there's still something programmed into teenagers where there's a part of them that hears, okay, don't get caught. Right? And the reality is, it's very hard to catch teenagers in things. You know, I still believe in supervision. I think parents should do their darndest. But the reality is, they leave the house, they're out with their friends. You don't always know what they're up to.
Right.
So part of why I encourage parents to say that around certain things like vaping, and I can think of some exceptions, is to stay out of a cat and mouse game. The other reason is you want the conflict not to be between the parent and the teenager, but between the teenager and the teenager. So what I mean is, rather than having a game where you're saying, I'm going to supervise you, you're going to try to get away with stuff, which is turning into a conflict with the parent and the teenager, you want to actually recognize that there's two sides to every teenager. The part that wants to do impulsive, maybe dangerous, not totally mature things, and the part that is thoughtful, cares about themselves, wants to be safe, wants to take good care of themselves. And so my sense is the safest teenagers are the ones where the adults are actively recognizing that they have a mature side, that they are eager to be safe, and we are sort of rooting for that side. To that end, parents can say, if you need to tell your friends that I am a vape maniac and I will toss your room and, you know, find this stuff, or I'm, you know, if you need to blame it all on me, go for it.
Wow.
You know, throw me under the bus. I am rooting for the side of you that wants to be safe. So I think that those are the ways that parents can navigate these more delicate situations with teenagers.
You know, you always change the way I think about parenting when we have you on. That's why I love these segments. And one of these moments that I feel, whether no matter what stage you are with your child, what age, the fact of acknowledging a loss of control to them, that you trust them, and that three, it's okay to throw mom under the bus if you need an excuse.
Oh, yes.
I've never thought of that.
Those are the safest teenagers. Absolutely. And I think, you know, the rule that I just is, if I had a tattoo, here's what it would say. Teenagers live up to expectations and teenagers live down to expectations. So it's really helpful to lay out clear rules and then hold high expectations and then deal in the realities of helping the teenager meet that expectation.
Wow.
Right. It's very hard if a teenager's leaving the house and headed to a party, if you just say, don't drink. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, mm-hmm. It sounds great. You're probably right. But what are they going to do when they get to the party? So we also have to do that further step of strategizing with them about how they're going to actually follow that rule.
Mm. It's so fascinating to hear you say have ways to open the dialogue, and that includes them and empowers them as well. You know, some say that vaping, it's really actually more of a safer way for teens to push their limits versus alcohol or hard drugs. What do you say to that?
I'm not sure I disagree with that.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing. You know, vaping is not safe, right? I mean, there's no question the vaping is unsafe, especially because of the nicotine question. And then also, there have been emerging studies. I think the data are still very murky. You know, they're inhaling other things too. They're inhaling microparticles from the coils. They're inhaling vaporized flavor, which basically is formaldehyde. You know, none of these things are good for your lungs, right? Mm-hmm. So there are real questions about the long-term effects of vaping separate from nicotine. So vaping is not safe. It may be safer than cigarettes, but it's not safe. Not vaping is definitely safer than vaping. Then there gets into the question of like ranking risks, right? Mm-hmm. So alcohol also alters the development of the teenage brain. It also impairs teenagers. You know, other drugs also alter the development of the teenage brain and are highly addictive and cause impairment. So, you know, if one were to create a sort of a spectrum of risks, I don't think vaping would be at the top by any measure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's worth considering the relative harms when talking with teenagers, because if we talk about vaping as if it were as dangerous as heroin, mm-hmm. teenagers know that's probably almost certainly not true.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as soon as we are saying things to teenagers that they know aren't really accurate, we lose them.
Because they can see that.
They can see that. And then they sort of think, well, I don't think that what you're saying over here is right. So how much of anything you say am I going to take seriously? So on the one hand, I feel like risks are risks. We don't want teenagers engaged with any risks. And we should talk to them accordingly. On the other hand, I'm surprised to find myself saying, I think that there's reason to talk with teenagers about relative harms and say, look, I really don't want you involved in vaping because I care about your brain. I care about your development. I care about your lungs. I care about you not being addicted to something that you're going to get stuck addicted to maybe indefinitely. Mm-hmm. And if they say, is it as bad as heroin? I think we can say, well, no, but you shouldn't do that either. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, mm-hmm. But I think that there's some benefit to not coming in full blast on everything mm-hmm. as if they were all equally dangerous.
So how do you know when to turn it up and when to dial it down with what is a horrible choice that they're making and what is one that you can kind of back away from?
That's a great question. So I usually think about adolescent behavior as having two different categories into which it falls, you know, adolescent misbehavior. So I think there's misbehavior, things that teenagers do that bother grownups, where there's really no potential for lasting consequences. So, you know, things like having their room be super messy, listening to really raunchy music, mm-hmm. You know, things that annoy grownups but won't matter when they're 30. And then I think there is a, you know, completely different category of things that really could matter when they're 30. And I think that our energies should be there. Mm-hmm. So you can put vaping in that category because, you know, shifting the development of the adolescent brain is no joke. Having an addiction that one needs to manage, even if one remains, you know, vaping and not switching over to cigarettes, you know, that's an addiction and that becomes a part of a person's life. So I think once we're into the category of things that can have lasting consequences, that's when I think parents should articulate their values, articulate their rules, reinforce rules that they make. But even within that category, from what I know about teenagers, we're better off if we are willing to have open conversations about the relative harms of things in that category.
Is there a way, and should you even do this, of trying to kill the allure, the appeal of vaping or drugs or whatever it might be to your child?
Yeah, I think we should be very clear about the downsides and very clear that that's why we have the rules we have, that there are true downsides that could harm the teenager either in the immediate term or in the long term. I also think if you really want to have a successful conversation with a teenager about why we don't want them to do something, I think there should be an openness on the parent side asking why the teenager would want to do it or mm-hmm. does want to do it or why teenagers do it. I will sometimes say to teenagers, you guys, like, why are kids into vaping?
Yeah.
You know, I'll ask it like that. And then get them to lay out the allure. And again, for adults, they may be like, what? That makes no sense. But you're much more likely to get an opening to say, okay, I get it. You know, it's a way to kind of bug the grownups. It tastes funny. You know, you can make crazy, you know, vape rings with it or whatever. I hear you. Here's my concern. Right? I think that here's my concern is much more likely to be heard if the teenager first feels heard.
Oh, interesting. So make sure they're heard first before you throw in your two cents about where this could lead.
Yeah. So one of the things I think about is they do have more expertise and more exposure probably to vaping than most parents. And the analogy I've thought about is if your 15-year-old came home and said, I'm interested in giving you guys some advice on your mortgage. Your parents. And however excellent the kid's advice would be, you'd be like, what? What are you talking about? What do you know about mortgages, right? And so I think if a teenager happened to have great insight on mortgages, the first thing they would need to do is say, guys, what kind of mortgage do you have? Why do you have that kind of mortgage? What's the appeal of that mortgage? Hey, did you know about this other kind of mortgage, right? Like, I think that we should use analogies like that when grownups come riding in with advice on things where teenagers have much more contact and much more fluency than we do, even if we're right.
Mm. Oh, that's so powerful to hear you say that. I would actually like advice for my child on mortgages because it can be very confusing with rates going up. But you're right. I would like to know what they know first. Lisa, would you talk?
You'd want to know that they knew what you knew first.
That's absolutely right. Absolutely right. Lisa, I want to thank you so much for joining us. But before we leave, I want you to give us sort of one takeaway that dealing with the subject of vaping or drugs or cigarettes, whatever it might be, what's really the one thing parents need to keep in mind that could really make a difference when having this conversation?
I think we always need to remember we are raising the best behaved generation of teenagers on record. Their cigarette use is at a 40-year low. They are using substances by and large, much less than any generation we've measured before. So I think come in positive, come in talking to the mature side of the teenager, find out what they know, and then talk in terms of risks that could harm the teenager.
It's great advice. Lisa DeMore, always grateful when you can join us and offer your take on parenting. Thank you again.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you again, Lisa, for joining us. And if you have any questions or topics that you want Lisa to touch on, send us an email, ctmpodcast@cbsnews.com. And if you want to get more from Lisa, you can read her terrific New York Times bestselling book, Untangled, Guiding Teenage Girls Through the Seven Transitions into Adulthood. And I have to say, it's not just for parents of teenage girls. Parents of boys can also use it equally as well. Thank you again for joining us.